we're scared by the continuous notices from the city, and we're like, I gotta get out of here. From before the first building was torn down or vacated, they were informed by us, by residents, by others, that there's not gonna be a place to go with these vouchers. They ignored that. When they started tearing things down, they ignored it. When they started moving people from one part of a neighborhood to another part, because they couldn't find places to go, they ignored it. And now that half the community is gone and there's only a few families who are subjected to some really, really horrible conditions and are still saying, I don't necessarily have anywhere to go, it's still being ignored.
Deconcentrating poverty doesn't resolve poverty. It just disperses people and makes them less noticeable. Networks of kinship that had offered some kinds of regulation and stability to people get unraveled through processes like these. And the cycle continues because the system continues, unless we choose a path that aims to create conditions in which poverty can be healed from, rather than rendering the poor invisible and isolated.
That's the voice of producer Adrian Wood from episode 3 of the podcast Wading Between Two Titans from the University of Virginia's Repair Lab. It first aired in 2022. Since then, it's been reported that the Norfolk Redevelopment and Housing Authority is continuing with plans to tear down Calvert Square and Yonge Terrace, the two other public housing parks mentioned in the show. And that does it for today. For now, I'm Lucy Kang. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.
This is Calvin Trillin, and when I'm in Portland, of course, my ears are glued to KABU because ever since Michelle Bachmann said that Hurricane Irene was God's warning to curb excessive government spending, I know that God can send wicked things toward people who do anything that he might disapprove of, and I know that there's a lot that he might disapprove of in Portland. So I want to know if the end is coming. I want to be able to get some warning, maybe get some laundry done, that sort of thing. So what I do is I listen to KABU. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Eugene Rashad. Join me every Saturday from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. for the best in jazz on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial.
But I dig, and I know you dig, because I got 4 requests for this thing already today. Strutting right with it.
That was KBOO volunteer disc jockey George Page. Page has been playing jazz and popular black music on KABU for the past 12 years.
What I do to the audience I draw, hopefully, is to please them with all types of black music. Mostly, what you can't hear as a rule on larger black-oriented stations in L.A. or San Francisco. I play a lot of blues and a lot of jazz. All of it's black-oriented, but it's not the cuts you're going to hear on the other jazz shows. It's not the cuts you're going to hear on other stations, because other stations just don't play jazz and blues in a black vein the way I do here.
Good morning, this is Disability Justice, an everyday pursuit and survival. Your host, John Griffiths.
And Dina Wilder, board operator.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. If you ever want to donate, you can donate by going to KBOO's website and click on the donate button.
Hi there. Would you please introduce your name and your pronouns?
Hi. So my name is Max Lazebnik. I'm 34 years old, and I'm an autistic artist who works and lives in Portland, Oregon, and my pronouns are he, him.
And Max, what is your history? And talk about that any way you want to.
Great. So I was born and grew up in Los Angeles. I'm the oldest of 4 children. And fun fact, my father, Rob, actually happens to be one of the writers for The Simpsons. And I drew ever since I was a kid. I used to draw a lot of stick figures. I was a big fan of the Beatles growing up, so I would draw their faces like throughout the years. It always like really fascinated me. And being autistic, I had a lot of special interests as a kid, including the Beatles, the U.S. presidents, Greek mythology, and of course, growing up in Southern California, theme parks. I graduated from New Roads High School in Santa Monica in 2010, and I graduated with a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Graphic Design from Champlain College in Vermont in 2014.
That is so cool. I was also wondering, and this is my third question, if I understand it correctly, you're an activist, aren't you? You're an advocate?
I do a lot of advocacy, yes. And I'm looking to do more as we speak.
And what are you advocating around right now?
Yes, so the big thing I'm advocating around right now is autism advocacy and acceptance. It is so needed right now. I mean, it's always been needed, but it's so needed now more than ever. I'm sure you've heard about all the conspiracy theories that that President Trump and Health Secretary RFK Jr. have put out that really target us. And not only is that dangerous, that's extremely offensive, because basically it's saying, like, it's better somebody get a deadly disease over being autistic, while being autistic is harmless. And I truly think that autism has, you know, I mean, we have our differences, but autism has so many positives too in us. And despite our differences, we're brilliant and we're great in so many ways. You know, I also want to talk about ways society can improve to better accept autistic people, which largely involves education. But I think it's definitely better to hear from autistic people themselves than from others. That's my take on that.
The only reason Donald Trump and RFK are doing this is to, you know, kind of lead people away from the bad job they're doing.
Exactly. You know, it's another distraction tactic. You know, it's very much like how they're trying to handle Epstein and all that, how they're shutting down the government over that, amidst other things.
They're just trying to redirect the blame towards people with autism.
Exactly. And yeah, it's extremely offensive. But unfortunately, you know, the anti-vax movement has been around for, goodness, at least 20 years, as far as I can remember. Well, it's probably been around longer than that, but it's been sort of mainstream for about, I want to say, 20 years now. Like, Jenny McCarthy was out there promoting all the same misinformation that RFK has been promoting. And there are, unfortunately, quite a few celebrities who believe in that. And it's extremely dangerous.
Well, it always leads down the road of that eugenics issues. It's just like, for some unknown reason, people just kind of come up with this, some way of separating that I'm better than you somehow. And it's all like that eugenic idea of, you know, when Hitler first put it out, you know, the Aryan Superman. And it's just never left the, you know, the world. It's just, I mean, and it probably was there even before Hitler, but I mean, it's just still very much still around, still.
It's really scary what we're living through right now with this second Trump term. And unfortunately, you know, it's funny. It's interesting because the vaccine and, you know, the vaccine autism relationship has been debunked several times. It's always been disproven. And what's really interesting about that is that all started because of Dr. Andrew Wakefield, who was a grifter. I mean, it wasn't even science. Like, this guy was trying to get money out of the pharmaceutical industry. And yet people still believe it, promoting all the same misinformation that RFK has been promoting. And there are, unfortunately, quite a few celebrities who believe in that. And it's extremely dangerous.
But anyways, we went down a negative rabbit hole. Let me get us back to what we're, the interview. So can you tell me a little bit something about your art? I mean, what kind of art are you into? It sounds like you're into drawing, but is there something more than just drawing?
Yeah, well, it's definitely drawing, but then it's a lot of mixed media. So it involves a lot of art markers like Posca markers and Copic markers, which are art markers, and colored pencils as well. So I do a lot of Copic markers over colored pencil with some, say, like white Posca or other colored Posca markers. So Posca's like an acrylic marker. Copic's an alcohol-based marker, and then that with colored pencil gives it sort of the illusion that it looks like a painting, which I think is really cool. And sometimes I dabble in acrylic and gouache paints as well. I don't do that quite as often now as I used to. And I do a lot of portraits of celebrities and people that I admire and that have accomplished big things in the world. And you're a good change in the world, I should say. And then for my landscapes, I do a lot of landscapes of parks and natural spots in PDX, like Forest Park, Overlook Park, yeah, a bunch of city parks. Although I've also done Enchanted Forest as well, which is in Salem. But then I also do some landscapes outside of Portland, including I just did Channel Islands recently. And then going back to my special interest of theme parks, I also did the Frankenstein Manor from the new Epic Universe at Universal Orlando. I haven't been there yet, but I'm just so obsessed with that structure. Like, it's just so cool, and I just love spooky stuff in general.
The Overlook Park, when you draw that one's, I think, isn't that in North Portland?
That's in North Portland, exactly.
And there's kind of like a fence there, and it kind of drops off like this, and you see the big train yard down there at the bottom, right?
Yes, that's exactly what I drew.
Oh, that's what you drew the train yard, or you drew the drop-off looking down onto the train yard?
Oh, sorry, more the drop-off looking down onto the train yard, because I drew like the trees and some of the grass and bushes in that too, and the drop-off.
Yeah, that has one of my favorite trees, with the one that has the big, is that a willow tree that has the big vines that all like are pointed downwards towards the ground, and yet the tree's going up, and it's kind of got a little bit of a mushroom shape to it, at least until it fills out in the springtime with all its leaves.
Yeah, I really love a lot of the trees in Portland in particular. Being from LA, you know, we didn't see nearly as much of that, which I think is so cool.
And you said you were originally in LA. When did you manage to make it here to Portland? I mean, and better yet, why come to Portland?
Well, I moved to Portland in 2020 during the pandemic. Honestly, LA was becoming a little much for me. Well, I moved back after college, and you know, it was very hard for me to handle the traffic and sort of the stress around the big city. And so it was nice to move, and my sister was actually living in Portland at the time too. So I decided to come to Portland, and honestly, I feel like the way of living in Portland is a lot easier overall. Like, you still get some good, like, sort of city aspects, but then you have a lot more greenery, and it's certainly calmer compared to LA.
So can I circle around back to your artwork? Other than what you mentioned, do you do any other forms of artwork? Do you take pictures? Do you hike to exotic places and sit there with canvas and paint? Any other kinds of artwork at all?
Yeah, good question. So in reference to a lot of the landscape work that I do take photos of my, you know, I'll go to some of those places and take photos of them on my phone, like especially for all the Portland area landscapes that I've done. But besides that, I don't really like go up there with the canvas necessarily. Like, I find that live drawing is actually harder for me than working off a photo, because with live drawing, you know, things move. And I feel like for me, that's a challenge, but I'm so impressed with everybody who are able to come up and just start drawing like live, like right there. I think that's really cool what they do.
And when you say live drawings, so are you drawing like cartoons and stuff like that? Or are you doing like the flip books or something?
Oh, no, sorry. Live is in like a still life, I guess, per se. Like, you know, like it's not from a photo. Like it's like you're actually at the place and drawing.
So you prefer to, whenever you do your drawings, you prefer to, as we were already stating with the Overlook Park, you prefer to be actually at that place when you're doing the drawing.
It's actually I prefer going there to take the photos, and then I'll draw later on.
Okay.
So then I'll like upload the photo to Photoshop and kind of edit it to make it look write for the canvas, and then I'll start drawing. I don't trace it all, of course, but I use the photos reference.
All right.
Actually, one thing I like to do as I'm working on my art is film the process on my phone with the time-lapse feature, and then upload those up to my Patreon that I run.
Can you tell us a little bit about your Patreon? What is your Patreon, and what do you have on Patreon?
Yeah, so on my Patreon, it's a lot of art process videos in particular. Also, like each week, I'll take a bunch of videos and then put them together, upload them once a week on average. That's one of the big things on there. And then sometimes I'll have like posts about my life, my art, my goals. Like recently I did a post about really wanting to do more public speaking, which interestingly got some more members on my Patreon. And on the side, I also run a YouTube channel called Maxic Kingdom, which revolves around theme parks, which has long been a big special interest of mine. So like Disney, Universal, Six Flags, you name it.
Excuse me for cycling back onto this, but back to your advocacy. Are you a part of any advocacy groups right now or in the past?
I am not involved in any advocacy like groups right now, aside from my studio. So my art studio, North Pole Studio, is where I work at, and I'm there 3 times a week, and they serve artists with autism and other disabilities, and other neurodiversities as well, I believe. We now do these community meetings once a month where we talk about what's going on in the world and essentially draw and do projects to kind of cope with everything that's going on in the world right now. And we also have these artist committee meetings once a month where we talk about like how we feel about the studio and ways to improve it and our art practice and how North Pole can best support us. And I feel like they're really, really advocating for us right now just by showing off our strengths.
One, I'd like to know a little bit more about North Pole Studios. I'd definitely like to know a little bit more about them. And number two, I'm kind of curious, are they showing your artwork? Like, do they have a studio in which people can step off of? You go to this address, you step into the store, and you can see Max's artwork. One, can you tell me a little bit about North Pole Studios? And then let me know if they've got a studio for us to see your work at.
Yes. So North Pole is they're a really awesome progressive art studio in Portland where they serve artists with autism and other disabilities and probably other neurodiversities as well. And we can go into the studio and like we can have studio time. Like I'll go into the studio 3 times a week, 3 days a week to work on my art. And it's really nice when, I have commissioned projects to work there. But North Pole has also gotten me some really awesome opportunities. Like, for instance, I designed a bus wrap for TriMet Lyft 2 years ago. And it was, regarding both autism and disability advocacy. And then I also worked on an animated documentary last year that they also referred me to. And so basically I illustrated this one segment. It was basically a person being interviewed, and then the animation was sort of about what the subject is talking about. I didn't animate, I just did the illustrations there. But then the director who I worked with went in and animated it on After Effects, which was really cool. And then they've also gotten me a lot of really cool, not only art opportunities where they've sold, where, you know, they've exhibited my art at a lot of places, but also some really cool speaking opportunities. And I just had one last month where I spoke at the Tillamook offices. And then I'm going to have another one this month where I'm going to speak at actually a show that I'm part of.
You said you were going to be speaking at a show. Where are you speaking? Which show is this? Where is it? And when is it that you'll be speaking at? Because I'm pretty certain there'll be some people who are interested in, okay, I want to go listen to Max speak. Where is Max going to go speak? And when is Max going to go speak?
Yes, so for this next event, it's going to be at the Archer Gallery. That's at Clark College in Vancouver, Washington. So obviously just north of Portland over the river. And I'll be speaking, and the show, the exhibit's from 1 to 3. And I'll be speaking, I don't know exactly what time I'll be speaking. I'm assuming 2 o'clock around.
And are you doing that this week? Are you doing that next week?
November 13th is when that is.
November 13th. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
thank you.
That's a Thursday. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. One more question about North Pole Studios. Does it cost anything for you to use their studios? I mean, you said you go in there like 3 times a week. Are you paying a fee to get in? Are you paying some kind of fee to be a member? Or, I mean, how? I assume they're getting money some way, somehow from you.
Oh, yeah. I do pay a fee monthly for studio, and it's actually a good deal. Like, I pay basically $165 for the month. And yeah, I'm there 3 times a week, and they have so many art supplies that you can use to work on your art. They also have paper and other materials provided. And then before I forget, North Pole also does a lot of really cool art classes too. And I had the privilege of teaching an art class there as well as doing a workshop. And the art class was on portrait drawing. And then I did a panel on sort of art business and self-promotion as well, which was really fun to do. And that's how I met Rachel.
My Rachel. Rachel Mulder.
Yes, you're Rachel, exactly. Rachel Mulder.
Oh, yeah. And you've seen her cyanotype artwork, right?
I have. Yeah, we follow each other on Instagram, and she's really talented.
Yeah, I just went to her most recent gallet or display at Elbow Room, another facility that does artwork or is an art studio for people with intellectual disabilities. Yeah. And
that's cool.
North Pole Studios. I'm just kind of curious, do you have any instructors or helpers or any mentors or anything else like that? And do you mentor other people who might be interested in artwork similar to yourself? Like, do you teach any classes?
Well, I only taught one class there. And that was the portrait drawing class that I mentioned earlier. There are mentors there, you know, sort of helping you like reach your goals, connecting you to opportunities, sort of running the studio, making sure things are going smoothly there. And everybody at North Pole is wonderful. I mean, everyone's just so down to earth, very supportive. Like I voiced my desire to do more public speaking, which is a big goal of mine right now. And they've literally been helping get going out there, making connections for me and giving me all these opportunities. I cannot be more thankful for them. They're so wonderful. And I've been with them for, goodness, I guess almost 4 years now?
4 years.
Yeah.
And did you start with them the moment you came up here from California, or did you start a little bit after you came here from California?
It was over a year after. I think it was February 2022 when I joined. And then I came to Portland in November 2020.
Your studios is in the Pearl District, and just for people who don't have a reference, is the Pearl District, is that like southeast, northeast?
Northwest.
Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Northwest Portland, more or less.
Northwest Portland, yep.
All right. Just wanted to give people somewhat of an idea of where the location of the studio was. I was wondering, am I missing anything? Missing anything with your art you'd like to tell us about? Missing anything with your history or maybe your advocacy or anything, you know, you want to bring up?
So the big thing that I was mentioning earlier is I'm really looking into more public speaking opportunities as I want to talk more about my experiences with autism and how society can basically come together to help advocate for us. and things they can do to accept us more. And then as far as my art goes, there's a big marriage between my art and advocacy as well. So for instance, the TriMet bus wrap that I designed has portraits of neurodivergent and disabled people that were drawn with rainbow colored pencil and on a light blue background to essentially talk about how wonderful, you know, autism and disabilities are, and just talk about the great accomplishments they made in the world. Because a lot of the time, you know, there's a stigma that people with disabilities don't get things done when they've gotten a lot done. And I mean, I do some political advocacy with portraits as well. So going back to RFK, I recently did a drawing of RFK as the devil in time for Halloween with the worm coming out of his brain. And then I'm actually currently working on a commission for a friend who had a friend killed in Gaza, which is very heavy and very heartbreaking, but also very meaningful at the same time. And I'm very honored to be asked to do that. And then I'm also working on a graphic memoir as well. I've been working on that for 2 years now. I've been very slow with it, I'll admit, but you know, that draft is done and now I'm just sort of editing it. I decided to kind of type it all up before I started working on the art. And that's very much, and you know, I'm just sort of rearranging the memoir to make it a little more chronological as the publisher asked. And the publisher is a personal connection of mine, which I'm very grateful for.
And I could say that the only reason we don't get things done as advocates is because we've got a lot of obstacles. I mean, I've been an advocate for like 14 years myself. And the problem with advocating is people put up too many barriers. And when they put up such huge walls and barriers that you can't get through, and you ain't got billions of dollars and the power to speak and all that other stuff. I mean, you know, it's not just the power. I mean, you know, it's having the financial power, the political power, people being willing to listen to us, which, you know, there's just a lack of all of that when it comes to people with disabilities. I mean, doesn't matter if you have an intellectual disability or a physical disability or an emotional disability, people just don't want to listen to us.
No, they don't. And it's really upsetting. And that's largely why I want to do public advocacy. And also just on social media, you know, you see CEOs like, you know, Mark Zuckerberg and Jeff Bezos bending the knee to Trump and basically just doing as he asks, you know, spreading misinformation online and just, you know, using corporate greed and not. And then, you know, in the workplace, too, that's also a problem because people who are autistic or have disabilities have a lot of barriers in the workplace, which is unacceptable just because, you know, they're different, even though they're so great.
How might people, I mean, do you have like a public contact?
I do.
Some form, yeah.
I do. I have several. So my website is cerebral.com. That's like my art portfolio site, and all my links are there. So it's cerebral.com. And then my Redbubble is redbubble.com/people/cerebral, capital S, URREBRAL. Artist with the capital R A, sorry. And then you can visit my North Pole page at northpolestudio.org /artist-max. My YouTube is youtube.com/@@maxic, M-A-X-I-C, kingdom, capital M and capital K. And then you can also find me on Instagram at cerebral, CERREBRAL_artist, all lowercase.
Thank you very much.
That's the end of Disability Justice. Since we cannot be fully aware of everybody's difficulties within the community, we would really like it if you would send us your email, disabilityjustice@kbu.org.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.